Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
On last week's program, we talked about success in finding a new job or making a career change at middle age if you're out of work or really don't like your job. This week, we'll concentrate on keeping the job you have and moving forward into a leadership role or advancing as a leader if you already are one. And let's assume that you're satisfied with the job you have today and you want to keep it. Despite reported improvement in unemployment figures, an estimated 1 out of 5 Americans remain unemployed or underemployed, not to mention many more stuck in full-time jobs they don't admire. And I'll bet a lot of those folks would like to have a shot at your job. My guest today, leadership expert Dan Scheide, is here to help you avoid that pink slip, and he'll also suggest some common pitfalls that can sabotage career success, and he has some very positive suggestions on how to advance into leadership and become an effective leader. And Dan Scheide is an author, speaker, trainer, and mentor. He's founder and CEO of 4Power Leadership, a company dedicated to leadership training for corporate and government clients. And he's served 26 of his 30-year career in leadership roles, including an Army officer, team leader, program manager, and vice president of a $16 billion Fortune 100 company. But he got tired of doing that, and he's now committed to creating new leaders and transforming average managers into extraordinary leaders. And he's author of the new book, 4Power Leadership, Your Pathway to Leadership Success. And hello, Dan. We're honored to have you with us here today.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Roy. I appreciate it.
Well, let's begin with the negative. What are some of those toxic traits that you mentioned that can be fatal in the workplace?
Well, there's a bunch, you know, but some of the top ones that come to mind are, you know, not being a good team player, for one.
Yeah.
You know, basically, at the top of the list, you know, people value folks that are easy to get along with,
yeah,
and that are, you know, likable, you know, aren't abrasive. So, you know, working on interpersonal skills and making sure that you're viewed as a positive team member.
Yeah, there was one kind of guy that used to bug the heck out of me. It was a person that would constantly be talking about themselves, their family, their career and stuff, and they really weren't very interested in what you were thinking and what you're doing in your career. It was always about them. Those are not effective team players for sure.
Yeah, and that's a simple soft skill, you know, for listening and not being self-centered. I mean, sometimes folks don't even realize they're doing it, and they get really excited and focused on the things that they're involved in. And, you know, they just don't give the microphone over to somebody else from time to time to allow them to talk.
There was one company you talked about being a good team player. I went to a company one time where they introduced this one fella, and then when he left the room, they said he's basically a very unpleasant person to be around. He really knows computers, so we just stick him. He loves Diet Coke, so we stick him in his office and give him as many Diet Cokes as he wants and just stay away from him. I wouldn't think that guy was, unless he's a real genius, I don't think, even if he is, I don't think he's going to progress too far.
Yeah, and I always say that, you know, you can be Albert Einstein, you know, but if you can't communicate your ideas and you can't interact positively with others, you're going to be severely limited.
Yeah, what are some of the other toxic traits that we find in the workplace?
Well, you know, I won't call it necessarily toxic, but another one that, you know, comes to mind is, you know, becoming obsolete, you know, and and that's a tough one. You know, I think as we progress in age, you know, our ability to learn, you know, is somewhat diminished. So we got to work really hard, you know, on making sure that we keep skills current and that we continue to have a career plan, you know, even in middle age. You know, career plans aren't just for young people starting out.
I know we've had various guests on here recently that said, really, we just think they're diminished, but they're not necessarily diminished. And a lot of it has to do with your attitude on learning new things, I think.
Yep, no doubt about it.
So, what about the know-it-all? Those are people we don't like to be around.
You know, that's something that definitely comes to mind. You know, the person that always starts spewing answers before they even hear the questions, you know, and we've got those in our workplace, and we've certainly, you know, need to kind of keep those, you know, basically those people become shunned in a way, you know.
Because they do.
It's similar to the listening problem where, you know, they act always like they have all the answer and their way is the right way. You know, I'm an engineer by trade, you know, my education.
Yes.
And I encounter a lot of engineers, you know, who feel that they always have the answer to the problem and that their answer is the right answer.
Yeah.
So I work with them, you know, to try to communicate a bit more effectively.
Yeah. A few years ago, when I was serving as a consultant, I took some possible venture capital people down to in the Kansas City area to meet with a company that was struggling to start up, and these people really wanted to help, you know, organize the company better and get some financing. But the people down there were these engineer types, and they had all the answers, and they just was such a turnoff because they seemed to know all the answers, even though it wasn't working for them. They didn't want to listen.
Right.
So obviously, then, they didn't get any money.
Another trait, too, is, you know, lack of emotional control.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know if you've had, like, experience where you're around a volatile person. At one minute, you know, they're fine. Another minute, you know, they'll blow up about something.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, especially as a leader, you know, maintaining emotional control is crucial. You know, you lose respect of your team, you lose respect of your coworkers when you have blow-ups.
I had a teacher in high school in shop that everyone hated because he was red-haired and had a huge temper, and he'd come up behind people with a T-square and slam it down on the desk and scare you. Everyone was deathly afraid of the guy, and he wasn't, you know, he wasn't somebody that was leading at all in high school. I'm sure he wouldn't be leading in business.
and as a leader, too, you know, there's a time and a place for anger.
Yeah.
You know, but even when a leader is angry, you can't, you know, you can have controlled anger display, right?
Yeah,
so,
right.
You know, there are times like when slamming the T-square down is the right answer. You need to get people's attention. They're out of control. You kind of shock them back into, you know, a focused position where they'll, you know, they'll calm down and start hearing you, you know, or hearing others. But you know, but even that is done in a controlled manner, right? It's done for purpose and effect.
This fellow wasn't very controlled.
Yeah.
How about the guy or the gal that always tries to take sole credit, either as a manager or a co-worker, when they're working with somebody on a project, and they always want to take the credit and don't give you any recognition for what you did. Those are not very popular.
No, I'll tell you, there's very few, you know, successful one-man bands out there, you know.
Yeah, that's
most everything that's a big success, you know, has been done with a team, particularly in businesses. And, you know, a really good leader is very quick to share the credit with the team. The leader doesn't take credit for the work and execution. You know, he gets credit for being a good organizer, for providing inspiration. So the leader that then immediately starts parading around the room with the trophy over his head is never
appreciated.
Yeah,
this was all my idea, and these people just supported me in making it happen. It really
Absolutely.
Another one that I can't stand being around is the obvious brown noser that's always trying to impress the boss, but really probably doesn't do his or her share of the work. But, you know, they do surface things that make them look good in front of the boss, but they really don't contribute very much. I don't think people care much for them.
No, you're right, and they, you know, they're observed usually always, you know, 2 inches off the boss's elbow, you know, always near the boss, trying to impress them, trying to, you know, cater to their every whim. And a lot of times, too, they flow that behavior downwards in the form of constant unreasonable requests, right? Because, like, you know, everything that the boss wants, he's going to get.
Yeah.
And so they throw it down the chain, and then it becomes a big problem for the work team. And that's a boss, you know, or a leader that's not really looking out for his team. He's basically trying to ingratiate himself.
Yeah, that's right. Another kind of co-worker I hate to be around is one that's always negative and complaining, you know, and it's usually behind the boss's back, obviously, but and then there's the person that's always running around starting the latest rumor,
The first one you mentioned is what is the obstructor versus enabler. You have, especially if you're in a leadership position, you never want to be viewed as an obstructor. I've had some superiors I work for where, you know, taking them down a path to make a decision or gaining their support, you know, you'd have to take them there kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
And that's not the place you want to be as a coworker or a subordinate. You want to be in a position where you feel you're supported by the person that's in charge.
When you have a boss that just says, well, that's not the way this company does something when you propose a new idea.
Or we don't do it that way. We've never done it before, you know.
Yeah, we've never done it before, so therefore it's not a good idea.
Right, and it stifles, you know, creativity. It stifles, employee engagement. So you definitely want to always be viewed as an enabler when you're in a leadership position. You listen, you take prudent approaches to things. Sure, you want to question and make sure that your workers have done the right thing as far as evaluating the course of action. But then you want to jump in and start being an enabler and helping them knock obstacles out of the way. And that's what they really
appreciate.
Yeah, you
make positive suggestions. Well, you know, this wouldn't work exactly like you proposed because of, but if we did this and that, you know, it probably would be a very positive idea or something like that. Then you really got them on your team and they're excited about it. And one of your blogs, you point out that some employees think and behave like renters and others like owners. And if you're an employee and not in a leadership position, why should you think like an owner? What's in it for you?
You know, it's a good question because it's not automatic that every company you work for and every boss you work for values, you know, your initiative and acting like an owner.
Yeah.
So it's important. So you say, what's in it for you if you're in that situation and they don't reinforce that? Well, I'll tell you what, it exercises your work ethic, and it exercises your ability to get things done, and if you start thinking, you know, with an ownership perspective, you have a higher level of performance that even if it's not appreciated where you are today, it will definitely be appreciated somewhere down the road.
Yeah,
and you're building a reputation, you know, for yourself that you can then market, you know, no matter where you work.
Yeah, and it's so important that the boss, the leader, include people so that they feel like owners, like showing people what the task they've been assigned, how that's going to help the company overall or the overall department objectives at least, how it's impacting the bottom line and why it matters, so you're not just doing some rote task every day just because you were assigned that.
Yeah, and that's what I call, you know, providing meaning, because rote tasks are essential. But a really good leader provides meaning even for those rote tasks.
Yeah.
And in most cases, there's room to solicit employee feedback. And that's a huge positive in trying to cultivate an owner's mentality among the workforce. Because when you're asking for feedback and you're asking for their ideas on how to improve things, then you're going to get much more engaged employees and you'll get those that ownership mentality out of your workforce.
Yeah, that's good. Old Tommy Lasorda, you say you got to get the employees leading Dodger blue.
Exactly. Yeah. You want them to think like they work for the best company in the world, and they're going to do whatever it takes to help make it successful.
Yeah,
and then, you know, showing also employees how their actions impact, you know, the company's performance. You know, yeah. Employees can become disengaged and they can become complacent when they're not, you know, properly handled. And they think the paychecks just appear out of thin air, right? And they don't connect. They don't connect their actions to company revenue, which then translates into a job and pay, right?
Yeah.
So the only, you know,
the only time those kind of employees really care that the company's losing money is when they don't get their raise or they don't get their bonus.
Right, and those are the renters among them, Mike. Right? They're just there for themselves, and they don't really care about the team or the overall welfare of the company.
Well, let's move on to the positive. Let's say you've been around for a while now as a valued employee, but you'd like to be promoted into a leadership position, but you have no experience leading and you can't picture yourself as a born leader. Is there any way you can learn how to lead, or are you destined always to remain a follower?
No, I get that question all the time in seminars and talks that I give, and I definitely think that you can learn leadership. And, you know, Vince Lombardi had a great quote, and I'll probably paraphrase it, but he was saying that, you know, leaders aren't born, they are made, and they are made just like anything else, through hard work, you know. And that's exactly what it takes. It takes hard work to become a leader. You've got to become committed to learning the skills and the discipline that it takes to be, you know, the person out front.
Yeah, that's so difficult is that, you know, somebody that's a great individual performer gets promoted up into leadership, and I think so many companies just completely neglect to give that person any training in how to lead, and they just suddenly one day come into work and they're supposed to know, you know, how to motivate their employees and how to get results and keep their employees happy and resolved and doing the right thing, and they just don't have a clue of how to do it. But
yeah, and that's very common, and touch on an excellent point there, that a lot of times companies will take the top performer in a given department and they'll say, you know, wow, you're the top performer, you know, we need a new supervisor in this area, so we're going to give the job to you, pat on the back, shake your hand, see you later, and that's the extent of the leadership training that you get. And, you know, that even happened to me. You know, fortunately, I had been in the military for four years before that, so I did have leadership training. But in my first post-military job, that's exactly what happened. I went from being one of the rank-and-file engineers to becoming a project manager, and I had zero, you know, training provided to me. And, you know, that's why I started doing what I'm doing with 4-Power Leadership, because I saw that, you know, happening so many times that people then begin to move up the ranks and they haven't mastered the basics on how to be an effective leader.
Yeah. Well, let's say congratulations. This was from one of your blogs, too. I think it said, congratulations, you've just been appointed leader of an ad hoc project team. And good news is organizing and leading a team to achieve a company goal will provide a special sense of satisfaction. And it obviously gets you noticed and in line for the next promotion. But the bad news is all eyes are on you if the project fails. And by the way, you have no formal authority over team members because you're not their boss. What are some solid steps you should take to get your team organized and working effectively together? How do you do that when you're suddenly a team leader?
Well, that is also a common problem, too. And that's what I call having all of the accountability and none of the authority.
Yeah.
And it's a really tough place to be in because you you know, you can't lower the hammer on anybody when you need to.
No, that's so, a real test of effective leadership, I guess, on the other hand.
Right, exactly. And what it really takes there, you know, so that's a symptom of what we call the matrix environment in corporations where ad hoc teams, you know, are pulled from various corners and then, you know, they're handed. So there's a couple of ways to fix that. Number one, corporately, if you can get your management, you know, to make policy changes where the team leader is now, you know, has some input into the person's review. Right, and then have actual control over a portion of their compensation, you know, through being able to impact that review. That gives them some formal authority.
Makes
but then the second thing is,
that,
say again?
I said it makes a lot of sense to me.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, so you're helping, you know, to get some of that authority that you need, but then in lack of that, you know, you build good, solid relationships with people. You learn the art of persuasion. You engage people on a personal level, and you gain their respect. You know, as being somebody, you know, who's trustworthy, and also, you know, getting back to our other topic, willing to share the credit, right?
Yeah.
So they know that if I devote my time to you, I'm going to get something back out of it because you're the type of leader who will advertise my name as someone who contributed, you know, to this job. So I get recognition.
Yeah, a couple of points that you made that I really like is you don't want to show up as leader with all the answers, because if you think you act like you know all the answers without even consulting the team members, they're not going to pay much attention to you, I wouldn't think, or be very
motivated. Definitely not. You know, definitely not. And on day one, and I've been in some nasty situations where I've taken over, you know, it's like a cleanup assignment where you're coming in behind, you know, a bad leader, and you need to kind of regain the confidence of the team. The first step to do there is to listen. You know, and listen and listen some more, you know, because the team will tell you what the problems are. And also, by listening and who's volunteering information, you'll be able to identify exactly who the engaged team members are and who are the ones that are the renters.
That's such an important thing that as a team member, you have to look each person in the eye and ask them for their commitment and get an agreement to do that. Otherwise, you have some people that hide under their desks and, you know, hunker down, don't want any of the assignments, and a few people get and wind up with all the work. That's especially true on church committees, I found.
and those types of things are you know, particularly difficult because they're volunteer organizations.
Yeah, that's right.
And you know, you're there for the goodwill of everybody involved, so you know, it does work out that way, unfortunately, in volunteer organizations where there'll be a small group of people that does all the work and everybody else is just along for the ride.
Yeah, that's why I think it's so important. You look each person in the eye and ask them to do something. And obviously, if it looks like it's fair how you're distributing tasks and everyone's in agreement, it's much more likely to lead to success than just arbitrarily assigning people various things. And then, like you said, you don't really have any authority over them, so it's hit and miss whether you get anything done.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are a few traits that you need to learn to be an effective leader or a better leader? What are some?
Well, that takes us right to the core framework of my book, Four Power Leadership, Your Pathway to Leadership Success.
Yeah.
And the name Four Power Leadership springs from exactly what you're asking there, you know, the four core powers, as I call them, that you want to master to be an effective leader. And they're real simple. They're all single words. They all start with P, so they're easy to memorize and put into action as soon as you hear them. And the first power is the power of poise, and the second is the power of presence, then there's the power of performance, and the power of persistence.
And just give us a brief meaning for each of those, because that sounds very logical. But
sure, absolutely. You know, poise is first about getting the inner you in the right place, right? Because like to cultivate positive leaders and teach people how to lead from a positive perspective. And you can't lead as a positive leader unless you have things right inside. So it's about getting your heart right, both from an emotional perspective and also from a value system perspective. So I talk extensively on those.
Effectively, unless you're effective and poised yourself, obviously.
Correct. Yeah, and when you have your heart in the right place, and you are you know, emotionally settled, you know, that comes through. People sense that about you immediately, and that feeds directly to the next power, which is the power of presence. And how you present yourself to others, and does your character and does your demeanor inspire confidence in the other person? And that's the main thing.
And it better be those real people, instead of fake.
Absolutely, because the authenticity or lack of authenticity will be immediately detected. And when people sense that lack of authenticity, it kills trust, because they always sense that something's not quite right.
Yeah.
So then you know, moving on to performance, I assume we're going there next.
Yeah.
Every leader, you know, you can have the nicest people in the world, Roy. You can be really popular. You can be well-liked. Yeah. But ultimately, as a leader, you're judged on your ability to get things done and to achieve results.
Yeah.
And that's the power of performance, learning the basic skills of leadership on how you organize people into accomplishing a common goal.
Yeah, that's certainly the essence of leadership.
Sure. And then, Tom, the power of persistence, which is the last most important trait in a way, because you know all of the other three powers will be diminished and fade if you are the type of person that at the first sign of difficulty just stops and doesn't know how to break through obstacles. So anything worth pursuing will encounter resistance, and persistence is the power that helps you overcome resistance every time.
Yeah, it's so important that you're consistent also in the not floating around from one idea to another.
Certainly.
Sticking by your guns in terms of...
being tenacious, exactly.
Yeah, I like how you point out what American companies today that don't do a good job of training new leaders and training their existing managers and executives as they move up, what are some of the disastrous consequences that may result from that. And you talk about sniping, dysfunction, resignations, deflections, all these kind of things are common if you don't have effective leadership training and effective leaders. And the company, as you point out, the company can begin to unravel from the bottom up. Executives may not be aware of the problem until it's too late.
Yeah, and that happens quite often, and there's two ways. A company can unravel from the top or the bottom, and sometimes they bring in the wrong CEO, and that person's toxic personality and toxic manners, right, will seep through the entire company and possibly destroy what was once a positive culture and a well-functioning organization. But then there's the reverse of that, where management at the top might have been very successful and very good leaders at one point, but they become complacent, and then they neglect, the leadership training and bringing in the next generation of leaders underneath. And all of a sudden, as the company grows, it doesn't have the base of leadership that's essential. That's very common in a lot of startups, right, where, the core group was so passionate and so focused, but then they started to expand and they brought people in and put people in leadership positions without really paying attention to their competency.
Yeah, there's so many stories of outstanding founders that once they retire or they die or whatever, then the company, all the professional managers come in, a lot of them don't really have the commitment, and the company stagnates or goes downhill after a period. Well, in conclusion, let's talk about your new book, Four Power Leadership, Your Pathway to Leadership Success. And there are tons of books on effective leadership out there. What differentiates your book from all the rest that somebody would want to pick it up?
There's a great quote from Colin Powell is that great leaders are almost always great simplifiers. And I love that. And I'm the type of guy that I really like to take what people think is a complex topic and really boil it down to the simple things that you can do. And especially the book is aimed at two audiences. Number one, if you're a new leader and you're starting on your path to leadership, this is a blueprint for exactly, how to bolster your skills and become, a better leader. Yeah. And then secondly, if you are a senior leader, you've been successful, and you need a tool to teach others, this is that guideline and that tool. And what makes it unique is I think it's simplicity and it's real down-to-earth perspective, and then also the focus and the foundation in virtues as a core of leadership. And
yeah, that's I don't a, get a lot out of all these management theories. They're always trying to sell in books that don't mean a lot to me. But if you have a few simple ground rules on what you can do when you're thrust into a leadership role, or of course also it'd be good for any readers that want to be leaders that, maybe they're not formal leaders right now, but they can certainly move forward and lead their coworkers and impress the powers that be so that they get a leadership job by demonstrating those qualities that you're talking about. So that, I think that would be a good audience as well, even if they're not currently leaders in the company in a formal title or something. But
exactly, and anyone at any given moment can be a leader and assume a leadership posture. And At the very least, if you're studying leadership and you read my book, even if you're not the type that wants to pursue leadership as a formal career path, you basically learn what good leadership is, and it helps you to learn who to follow, which is important too.
Yeah, that's true, because if you get in the wrong department, even if you're a real qualified professional, and you work for the wrong boss who doesn't know how to lead, it can be a miserable experience. And I can speak to that because I've had a few of those in the past.
Haven't we all? That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, how best can someone preview and purchase your book? Where should they go to do that?
Well, as the saying goes, it's available everywhere books are sold. You can go to your local bookstore and order a copy. It's not on the shelf there, but it can be ordered. But also it's available online through Amazon.com and also through my website.
Yeah.
And if your listeners basically want to order a signed copy, you can go to my website too, and I take your order, and I'll send you a personalized copy.
Oh, and what's that website address?
It's www.4power.com is the shortcut to get there.
It's just
the number
four
and the word power.
Yeah, okay. No, it's a real short and easy website to remember because I reviewed that. Well, in conclusion, whether or not you hold a formal leadership position, as an experienced middle-aged adult, you can exert a positive leadership influence on the job. You're not, like a reed in the wind, like some of these younger employees that haven't been around for a while. You know what good leadership is and bad, because I'm sure you've experienced both. And you can also be a leader in your home and in the organizations where you volunteer, socialize, pray, or play, as I like to put it. And as a positive co-owner of the organization or the company you're participating in, you can accept responsibility as a role model to lead others in the same positive direction. And believe me, benefits will flow back to you in more ways than you can imagine. And that includes formal leadership responsibilities that are likely to come your way. And you'll be the least likely that you'll receive that pink slip. But should you receive one due to circumstances way beyond your control, like the division closes or your company goes out of business, you'll be prepared to move on to your next career challenge with a positive attitude to know how to lead others. And now let's go out and lead in a positive direction. And thank you, Ron Scheide. Best of success on your book and in your leadership training. The world needs inspirational mentors like you to show us how to lead, I'd say.
Well, thank you very much, Roy. It's a pleasure to have spent this time with you.
And have a great day, and keep leading us to greener pastures.
I'll do my best.
I'm sorry, that's Dan Scheide, not Ron. I don't know why I called him the wrong name, but when you're looking for his book, look for Dan and not Ron. And thank you for joining us today. My guest, Dan Scheide, talked about common traits found in great leaders, and for the remainder of today's program, I'm going to address you as a leader, as an owner or manager of a small business, as a high-level executive, perhaps even a C-level executive of a medium to large company, or maybe as a department or division manager or a supervisor within your company. And even if you don't presently hold a leadership title, you can be a positive influence in your organization. And as when you think about it, at middle age, we're all leaders of some type. And during the latter stages of economic expansion, you're probably aware, as I am, that economists seek out and analyze what they call early warning signs, which more often than not signal an impending recession. And wouldn't it be great if, in a like matter, you could identify and address company-specific or department-specific early warning signs which may portend near-time or near-term stagnation or decline? Well, I believe that enlightened enterprise leaders or department leaders can detect and address human early warning signs, as I call them, before they begin to negatively impact the bottom line. A worthy objective is to prevent loss or deterioration in your company or your department's most valuable resource, and that's the cherished men and women who staff and manage day-to-day operations. And here are some of those signs. Early warning sign number one is increasing leadership isolation. You know, history demonstrates time and again that employees in the ranks lose focus when senior managers and executives begin to isolate themselves from frontline managers and employees. You know, they're always attending executive meetings with other executives, and they tend to look outward, maybe to raise funds or to appease investors, and they start ignoring their employees. In contrast, our most effective leaders routinely interact with colleagues and subordinates at all organization levels, and leadership isolation hinders two-way flow of essential intelligence. You know, the people on the front line know a lot more than you do about what's going on down in the ranks. It stifles initiative, obviously, if nobody's paying attention, and it cultivates the dreaded company rumor mill. You know, to effectively communicate downward and outward, you as a leader must demonstrate genuine interest in the role played by every member of your team. And if you do not believe that employees in the ranks are essential to success, try performing their jobs for a day or two. I used to like that TV program where the CEO would assume a lowly role in the organization and see how tough it was to do that job. Take time both to ask and answer questions in a relaxed, non-threatening manner, and whenever possible, demonstrate how each employee contributes to the overall success of your company. And thank everyone for doing their jobs when they're doing them well, and listen intently to every voice, suggestion, and concern. You know, you just might learn something. And here's warning sign number two. That's employee burnout. It's especially prevalent in a small business. Most frequently, employees burn out simply because they are asked to work too hard for too long. Are you demanding too much from too few? Do you routinely impose upon employee personal time? You know, an extended diet of 18-hour days, 6 or 7 days a week, will sap energy from even your most dedicated contributors. An excessive workload is not the only cause of employee discontent. Pure boredom also can take its toll. I've had a few jobs like that over the years. Over time, your most competent veteran employees will wear down, performing the same old, mind-numbing, repetitive tasks. So give them, inspire them with a variety of new and interesting assignments, and grant as much latitude as you can in setting up their own work days so that they can themselves determine and do a variety of different tasks over the time at work. And warning sign number three, this is a common one, oh so common, that events appear to be managing us. You know, leaders of backsliding enterprises seldom, if ever, appear to be in control of company destiny. Do you find yourself scurrying simply to keep pace with competitors? Do you diagnose and address customer relation difficulties only after you lose a prized account? And do you accelerate research and development only after someone else launches a product superior to your own? You know, with rare exception, top-tier leaders are able to constantly remain one step ahead of external events and the competition, and progressive leaders resolutely refuse to relinquish control over the future. How about warning sign number four, employee departures for lateral positions? The occasional departure of a valued employee may be viewed almost as a compliment to your company's training capabilities and the depth of your talent pool, and losing a prized employee from time to time is a fact of life. But as a leader, your critical task is to detect any unusual or unwarranted increase in employee departures, especially if they're accepting lateral positions with competitors. Does a spate of recent departures signal general job dissatisfaction, employee perception of diminished opportunity, or the widespread belief that your company is falling behind? Have competitors begun to pay more for comparable job functions? Is your benefit package inferior? Worst of all, are qualified veterans leaving simply because someone else's workplace appears more challenging and alive? How about warning sign number five? It's related, and that's a drain in the company talent pool. Large or small, your enterprise can ill afford to neglect player development and succession planning. A winning company routinely recruits quality talent to fill a broad range of attractive entry-level positions, and then once on board, talented recruits are groomed as winners, trained and nurtured through increasing levels of challenge and responsibility. Are you doing that for your top employees? and a top-notch organization always has strong backup talent waiting in the wings. Has it become harder and harder for you to locate qualified internal candidates to fill prime vacancies? Have you only recently become a regular customer of personnel agencies or executive search firms? And have gaping holes begin to appear in your company's management succession chart? How about warning sign number 6? So that's just a decline in employee enthusiasm. No hard facts to go on, but no enterprise will prosper for long once employees become convinced that they are fighting to save their jobs, that opportunities for growth and advancement are non-existent, or that they face a potential loss of status, pay, or benefits. You know, in addition to excessive workload, company energy can be drained by anticipation of a favorable company outcome. Excuse me. Is a corporate rumor mill running rampant? Has the typical workday degenerated into a series of knee-jerk responses for most people into unanticipated, unpleasant surprises? And just simply because your leadership team and colleagues remain optimistic, it's never safe to assume that subordinates share your enthusiasm. Excuse me. Could it be that your employees in the ranks do not have all the facts? As a leader, you may be able to cheer up disheartened junior colleagues by communicating one or more encouraging trends or a previously unannounced positive company initiative. Whenever possible, spread that good news. Here's warning sign number 7. Reorganization becomes your principal innovation. You know, this one applies mostly to large corporations, but mediocre leaders lacking true strategic vision often seek to leave their mark through perpetual reorganizations, relocations, or staff reductions. And I challenge you to demonstrate how constant tinkering with an organization chart or relocation of a plant, store, or office locations has enhanced the bottom line. In unique circumstances, sweeping staff reorganizations can produce positive results when they support a major product innovation or the introduction of breakthrough technology, and at other times, obviously, sadly, radical downsizing may be appropriate as a last resort to deteriorating profits or a long-term decline in demand. But in contrast, these mindless reductions or reshuffling of workforce is highly disruptive, and it saps the energy out of staff instantaneously. How about warning sign number 8? Office politics becomes more important than mission. I've sure worked in places like that. A company is headed for a certain decline when talented executives and managers begin to expend the bulk of their time, energy, and imagination in gamesmanship rather than accomplishment of shared company-wide objectives. You know, an astute CEO seeks to inspire energetic but friendly internal competition, but healthy enterprises, the bottom line always remains the number one priority, and managers and employees understand and support the challenges and perspectives of their counterparts in other departments, profit centers, and functional areas. And warning sign number 9 is a more serious version of office politics, and that's dividing up into armed camps, an advanced, often fatal version of office politics. Do business colleagues surrender valuable time and resources battling over turf in a shrinking or stagnant field of opportunity? Is your company on the verge of choosing up sides or dividing into warring factions? You know, if that's true, you as leader must take immediate steps to impose a mandatory ceasefire, diagnose the causes, and forge a sustainable truce. And warning sign number 10, you don't really know your employees. You know, leaders of struggling organizations often display unsettling ignorance regarding employee capabilities, temperament, and career aspirations. Outstanding contributors deserve and demand recognition and material reward for performance consistently beyond the ordinary, or if not material reward, they certainly deserve recognition and thanks for doing a great job. And business leaders who fail to identify and nurture top performers soon begin to lose their best and discourage the rest, as I like to put it. And finally, warning sign number 11, and this is an odd one, are your employees too content? Have colleagues and subordinates become overly complacent in maintaining the status quo? You know, that simply doesn't work in these days of constant change and innovation in industry. Has entitlement replaced innovation as a central enterprise theme? Has it become far too easy for marginal contributors to meet and exceed watered-down expectations? Is your company slipping into mediocrity because leaders are forcing too much attention upon just ensuring the good life for every employee? You know, the key issue you and your leadership colleagues are consistently whether you're consistently challenging subordinates to extend individual and collective boundaries. Are you certain that company bonus and incentive programs both inspire and reward genuine excellence? Well, perhaps none of these 11 early warning signs I just mentioned apply within your enterprise, yet maybe you can remain convinced that all is not well. If so, don't ignore your instincts. More often than not, veteran in-touch leaders begin to sense unfavorable trends long before they surface or they become apparent to a casual observer, and large or small, every enterprise has its own unique collective personality, and I trust you're on top of the personality in your company or organization. And for any business beyond infancy, it makes sense for senior leaders and department managers, you and along with all your colleagues, periodically to step aside from the daily routine to reaffirm the collective mission, reexamine priorities, and take a temperature of employees and reignite the flames of innovation. That's the only way to survive these days, isn't it? And if you're a current or inspiring leader in your place of business or a volunteer organization, and either you or your participants' spirits are lagging, perhaps also the bottom line, I've written a book just for you. It's my second book, Wake Up, Captain and Crew. It's a comprehensive formula for recreating and re-energizing lagging enterprises and participants midstream. It provides A to Z leadership roadmap from diagnosis to cure to get everyone back in touch and moving forward together. And that's, once again, that's Wake Up, Captain and Crew by Roy C. Richards. And that, of course, is me. And the book is available through Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, or you can go to our new, spanking new, redesigned website, www.middleagerenewal.com. And you can check out a number of free gifts we offer on that website, including a mini course that you can download at no expense. And that's our program for today. I hope you all have a great week and come back next week. In the meantime, remember that middle age can be your best age.
You've been listening to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, hosted by Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of both A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, and Wake Up, Captain and Crew, Restart Your Engines. You can learn more about Roy and his Middle Age Renewal Training System by visiting his website, middleagerenewal.com.